Hello, welcome to the Beatles Books podcast with me, Joe Wisby. I'm joined today by Mary McGlory and Sylvia Saunders, who are here to talk about their book, The Liverbirds, Our Life in Britain's First Female Rock and Roll Band. Along with Valerie Gell and Pamela Birch, Mary and Sylvia were inspired by early 60s Liverpool to form their own band. And despite a less than encouraging word from a certain John Lennon, the Liverbirds went on to great success, particularly in Germany. Mary and Sylvia share with me their incredible and groundbreaking story. Sylvia Saunders, hello. Welcome to the Beatles Books podcast. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Nice to meet you as well, Joe.
Thank you. And Mary McGlory, hello. Welcome to the Beatles Books podcast. How are you?
I'm fine as well. Nice to meet you too, Joe.
Good. Excellent. We are here to spend a little bit of time talking about your book, The Liverbirds, Our Life in Britain's First Female Rock and Roll Band, which is a brilliant read that I would recommend to anyone listening, as I normally do. We're going to talk mainly about the Beatle and Liverpool angle of your book, of which there's much more after that for readers to pick up and discover. Before we do that, I wanted to ask a good old-fashioned, obvious question. You could have written this book at any point, really, in the last kind of, whatever, 20 years or so. Tell us a little bit about why you both decided to write this now and share your story with us now.
Well, in Hamburg, the interest in our group never finished. It was carrying on for all the years. And I don't think it was quite as much in England as it was here, because, of course, we played here for a lot of years, or stayed here. I think it was when our husbands died, and at the same time, a lot started happening with the musical in Liverpool and then all of the things that came from that. And everybody said to us, and Sylvia and my husband always said, somebody's got to write a book about you. And it seemed like the perfect time to do it. And it helped us to get over our loss as well.
Mm. What was it like writing it? Was it fun? Was it difficult? Was it easy? What was it like?
Oh, lots of fun, because it brought back lots of memories of what we used to do and that. I mean, we still can't believe we actually did all that, because we were so young and naive, and mind you, we soon grew up.
Let's talk a little bit about Liverpool in the early 60s and the genesis of the Liverbirds. Most listeners will know that at that point, Liverpool was a very fertile music scene. There were lots and lots of bands forming, playing gigs. There were lots of places to play gigs, which obviously is much different to now. Would you say that it was that fertile music scene that led you to want to be in a band? When did you first decide that you wanted to get a group together?
Well, definitely with me, it was seeing the Beatles in the Cavern. I was there with three cousins of mine, and we just thought, we want to be like them. Let's do it. Couldn't play a note between us. Asked the Remo Four that were on the same night, where did people buy instruments? And they said Hessies over the road, and we went there the next day and bought instruments, even though not one of us could play. And we didn't even know they had to tune guitars. We thought they just stayed in tune all the time. That was how that part started. We got publicity, luckily enough, in the Merseybees, that put my address in the newspaper. Because of that, when we realised, my first so-called band, that wasn't going to work out, because of this article, Val and Sylvia had my address and got in touch with me. And that's how we started.
I was with Val. Val was my friend at the other side of the town from Mary. And Val used to play guitar, which I didn't realise she played. And we used to go to the town halls in Littleland and all around and see the bands. And I said, oh, God, Val, this would be great, wouldn't it, hey, to get a band together? And she said, well, yeah. A week or two later, she said, hey, look, she said, this in the article in the Merseybeat, it's about a girl band, and yet we've not heard any more about them. Shall we go and see what's going on? And so we did. So Val and I then went to Mary's house and knocked on the door and said, have you got a band? And she said, well, no, not really now. We don't play. We can't play. So then that's how the four of us, well, three of us, first of all, got together.
Were you surprised that there weren't other girl groups? Were you literally the only girl group around at that time in Liverpool?
Not just Liverpool, there were no other girl groups. It was that idea that struck us, that we wanted to prove that girls could do that as well. That was a big part of the idea.
I mean, I don't think there were any girl bands at all in the UK at all. Not in Scotland, Ireland, Wales.
People say we can definitely claim to be the first all-female band in Europe. That's true. I think even in the world, but it's a bit hard to prove that one because there was the Americans, Gilding, the Gingerbreads, but they were half boys at first. We were before them doing the whole four.
So you mentioned seeing the Beatles there. Obviously, for the purposes of our podcast, we spent a little bit of time having some Beatle chat, if you don't mind. Did you see them in the Cavern? Was that where you saw them play?
Yeah, that was where I seen them play. And it was just amazing because, I mean, you could go down to the Cavern at dinner time and see the Beatles in your lunch break. And everybody wanted to see the Beatles. It just caught on so quick. And like I said, the amazing thing was being able to go at dinner time and it was crowded and the Beatles would be on stage. And not just then, of course, there were the Jerry and the Pacemakers and the Searchers and lots of other bands, but they were the main ones and they were the ones that had the atmosphere. They'd been to Hamburg for weeks and weeks and weeks and improved their style and their outfits and everything. So they got it, definitely.
And then that's when Mary took us to the Cavern. She says, come on, let's go to the Cavern and see the Beatles. They're on tonight. So she said, come on, I know how to get in. So she has her guitar case with no guitar in and says to Bob Wooler, hi, Bob, we're here. Can we come in? He said, oh, all right, come on then, girls. And that's when the first time I saw the Beatles with, I just couldn't believe it. Like Mary said, she'd been looking at them and watching them. And she said, honestly, wait till you see them still. They're absolutely fantastic. Gosh, your mouths were just open listening to them. They were fabulous.
Did you get a sense of their kind of characters and their personalities at that point? Or was it just the power of the music? Or what was the main appeal at that point in the Cavern?
The four of them. I mean, Pete Best was still with them at the time. Every one of them looked special and every one of them was so cool when they were standing on stage. And because of the way things were in them days, they just mixed with the audience before they went on stage and when they came off stage. And either go over to the pub because, you know, the Cavern didn't even sell alcohol. And there was this amazing atmosphere there that just knocked everybody out without any drugs or alcohol. Even everybody go down afterwards, down to the Pierhead. There was a thing that sold potato pies and whatever. And you just go down there either in the dinner break or afterwards. And the people like the Beatles standing there eating their meat pies.
You mentioned Bob Wooler there, and it was Bob, he introduced you to them, which is a brilliant story and a real highlight of the book. How did you get to meet them, first of all?
Well, it was Bob Wooler who said, do you want to come and meet the boys? The boys, everybody called them the boys. So we said, of course, we want to go meet the boys. And he took us into the dressing room. And there was just Paul and John Lennon in there getting changed and wiping themselves with towels because they were sweating. Bob Wooler said, this is the Liverbirds. They're our first all-female group. And that's when John Lennon turned around and just looked at us very sarcastically. Girls don't play guitars.
Yeah, so then we thought, oh, gosh, we'll show him. You know, we're not just girls. We can play guitars and drums, of course, with me.
Yes, of course, yeah.
What about Paul? Did you get any reaction from him?
He said that's a great idea. But he was more, you know, Paul being Paul and John being John. You can tell the difference in their remarks.
What about George and Ringo? Did you have any encounters with them?
No, well, at that point, Pete was still with them.
Okay.
But George was standing outside the dressing room, very tiny dressing room, looking dead cool in a black leather coat that he's obviously bought in Hamburg and talking to a girl with long blonde hair and just looked at us sort of from the side when we walked in. But he was too busy talking to the blonde.
That sounds like George. Did you see the Beatles much after in Liverpool, in other venues apart from the Cavern?
No, I didn't see them anywhere else.
Okay.
Not the Beatles. Not the Beatles, but separately we did, didn't we, Mary? You saw Paul quite a few years later.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving forward a little bit, later on, you got to encounter the the Rolling Stones, and obviously people have this great Beatles and Stones comparison. What was it like meeting them? How different were they from the Beatles?
Well, at the time when we met them, they were very, very shy. It was more a bit later on, the reputation, where you'd say they might have been a bit wild or whatever you'd call us. I always think of that Liverpool was so proud of the Beatles, so proud of them being our boys. And the few times that we went to London afterwards, I didn't get that feeling that everybody in London was proud of the Rolling Stones like we were of the Beatles.
And the Rolling Stones, as Mary says, they weren't really famous then. We sort of met them as ordinary lads just on doing gigs and things. And they were great. We loved them. We loved the Stones.
Once you started to play gigs yourself, what kind of reaction did you get from being this all-girl group? What kind of reaction did you get from people initially?
Well, that was one of the things that we were a bit worried about, because we didn't know our girls were going to accept us. And especially when we played at the Cavern, because we had promised Bob Waller that as soon as we were good enough, we'd play there. So we were worried a little bit, because in the Cavern, there was like right in front of the stage, there was like about 10 rows of chairs with maybe 12 or 15 people in a row. And it was all girls sitting there. You wouldn't see one boy sitting there. And so we thought, well, what's going to happen when we start? And when the minute we started playing, they all started shouting, come on, girls.
Come on, girls.
Show them what you can do, girl. We're proud of you. So, as you know, we haven't only got our Beatles, we've got our girls now as well, our Birds.
What about the other groups in Liverpool at the time? Did you get any like discrimination from them, or were they generally supportive of you as well?
Oh, no, they were very supportive of others. We never any jealousy at all. We never saw that at all, you know.
It was just the opposite. That say, you know, do you want us to give you a hand in any way? Do you want us to give you a few tips about what to do and things? Some groups even came down when we were practicing, you know, to see if they could give us any advice of what to do. Quite a few of them, as a matter of fact.
There's a few other people that I'd like to talk about with Beatle connections, and one that I'm really interested in is Brian Epstein, who you had an encounter or two with. You went down to London to meet Brian. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, you know, the thing is, when you think about it, we always have to say to ourselves, people aren't going to believe this because of the way it's happened, but it happened really exactly that way. We'd had trouble with our so-called manager. He'd been doing us out of money, and our parents were worried. I mean, don't forget, we were only 16 and 17 at the time. Mm. And we just thought, oh, well, let's go down to London and ask Brian Epstein to be our manager. We didn't even have an appointment or anything with him. Got a train down and sat in this little coffee bar in Piccadilly. And there he was walking past. And Pam said, oh, gosh, there's Brian Epstein. We said, oh, come off us.
We didn't believe her, did we? But she knew. She said, it is. That's Brian Epstein.
At first we thought it might be somebody that just looks like him, but we ran after him, grabbed hold of him, didn't we, Sylvia?
Yeah.
He ran down the stairs to Piccadilly Circus Underground and was trying to run away from us, and we grabbed hold of him because it was obvious he was going to think we were just four mad Beatle fans in their duffel coats running after him.
He just turned around and we said, look, we're a girl band, we're the Live A Birds. And, you know, we want you to manage us. He said, what, all girls play guitars and drums? We said, yeah. He said, well, okay, he said, come to my office. So the next day, we didn't have anywhere to stay because we'd only sort of gone down there on the train. So we slept in the park that night. So we went to his office, didn't we, Mary?
Didn't even have a bloody comb or anything to get ready to go there. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall when we went into that office. He was perfect gentle with him and his secretary. They were really nice to us. And we said, you know, we're a girls group and we've had trouble with our manager and our parents are getting on to us. And he said, well, listen, girls, I've got to at least see you before I become your manager, haven't I? So he gave us his card and he said, I'll be back in touch with you. I'll arrange for you to play somewhere quite soon and I'll come and have a look at you. And he did.
Yeah, he sent him. sent someone, he did. We thought he hadn't come, you know, to see us. We thought, oh, he's all talk. But he wasn't. He had sent someone, and they'd gone back and said, they're all right. Those girls are all right. But we didn't know that at the time. It was only afterwards that we realised that he wanted to be our manager. He said he wanted to be our manager. But then we saw an advert in the Rialto, to go to the Rialto, bands wanted for the Star Club, where we knew the Beatles had been to the Star Club. And we thought, God, if we can get there, it'd be fantastic. We'd just like the Beatles. Mm. So we went off to the Rialto and we auditioned. And Henry Henroyd, who then was booking the bands, when he heard us, he said, oh, yeah. He said, Manfred would really want you, girls, he said. So then we sort of went into a hotel. He said, we'll put you up in a hotel and then we'll take you over to Hamburg. But then in the meantime, Brian Epstein had got back in touch with us and said, okay, girls, I'll manage you. And we said, oh, but we've had an offer from Manfred Weisleder to go to the Star Club. We said, you can be our manager when we come back. We're only going to go there for a month. But you can be our manager when we come back. But of course, we never did come back, did we?
How different do you think it would have turned out if he'd managed you?
Well, we know quite some other groups, a few other groups that Brian did manage. A lot of them, they might have been better off without him, because he was more or less concentrated on the Beatles and Jerry and the Pacemakers and Cilla Black. So I think, of course, we often got asked that question in the years later. Yeah. But we never regretted not going with him, did we, Sylvia?
No, not at all. Everybody says, do you regret it? And we'd say, no, we do exactly what we did them days, because it just turned out absolutely fantastic for us.
Yeah, good. You mentioned Hamburg there, which is, as you said, is also a place always that will be associated with the Beatles. So let's talk a little bit about Hamburg. First question, what was it like in all the Beatles books and the films? You know, you see them walking in, and it's this big city of sin, and it's a bit overwhelming. Was that what it was like for you when you first arrived there?
Exactly.
It was, because we got the shock of our lives when we got out of the taxi. We didn't know it was going to be like that. There were strip clubs right next to the Star Club. Even if the entrance of the Star Club, you'd go up the stairs on the right, and there was a strip club. It was also open. And we were absolutely, I mean, especially me, because, Sylvia as well, we were so innocent. We didn't even know that things like that existed.
The only lights I'd seen like that was in Blackpool. And that was no comparison.
When you were there, was there a sense of the Beatles there as well, like there was in Liverpool? Obviously, they spent so much time there. Did you get a sense of them being proud of their success, having spent that time in Hamburg?
Definitely. Even John Lennon said, didn't he, that he was born in Liverpool, but he grew up in Hamburg. And that's exactly what everybody in Hamburg thought as well.
And I think that was the same as us, because we grew up in Hamburg as well, because we went out there very, very innocent. But we soon grew up there as well.
We're still growing up, Sylvia.
Did you find success straight away there? Well, straight away, was it noticeable there that you were a hit in the clubs there?
Yeah, it was. From day one. What we haven't really been able to talk about, the time that we had to, the weeks that we wasted in London for Sylvia's permission to come through, because in the meantime, the other three of us were 18, but Sylvia had a few more months to wait, so she had to get court permission. And in them months, Manfred Weisleder, the owner, had been advertising us as though we were going to be there the next day. So every day the people were coming and waiting for us. It got to the stage where they beginning to think we didn't really exist. So we arrived in Hamburg. A few hours later, we were on stage at the Star Club, and the people went absolutely mad.
Everybody sort of knew us as the female Beatles. Everyone kept referring us as the female Beatles. So the Beatles were all still there.
Okay. And then Manfred had this idea of, he wasn't too happy with the way we were dressing. It wasn't very good, was it, Sylvia? Then he said he was going to ask Astrid Kirk if she could help us to get some better idea of what to wear. And she invited us to her house, and that's when we seen this fantastic room where Air and Stu had lived together and where he died. And that connection that we had then through Air to more being closer to the Beatles. It felt like you could still feel them in Hamburg, being in their house.
I was going to ask you about Astrid. So what was she like?
With us, she was absolutely fantastic. From right away, she let us feel as though, you know, we were welcome in a little group of people that she had. But with other people, she could be very... People were often frightened to talk to her or even, you know, be close to her because she seemed very, like, something special. Like, she's not from this world. But with us, she was great.
What can I say about her? She took us under her wings because as soon as we arrived in a flat, she says to us, would you like some champagne? Would you like pink or white? And we'd never even tasted champagne. And she comes out with a bottle of pink champagne. That was Astrid. She was just absolutely beautiful.
How did she change your style? What kind of ideas did she have for you?
She was the one who suggested that we had the black trousers, a waistcoat and blouse with a frill on us that a lot of people wore shortly after that. That was all her idea. And it was just the right thing for us to have on at that stage.
And for Mary and I to get rid of our bouffant hairstyles.
As you said, you found this success straight away, pretty much in Germany, in Hamburg. What was it about life out there that made you want to stay? Was it just the success you were having, or did you feel at home there? What was it like that made you want to spend more than that initial month, as you said, out there?
Well, it was Manfred Weissleder, after the first week, said he'd like to manage us, and we signed a contract with him. He really did take care of us, and we felt as though we were in good hands with him. So after the trouble we had in England with the first manager, it seemed as though we definitely had somebody, even though he had like this reputation of being like the boss of the Red Lice area because he had many, many strip clubs and things like that. And it was so exciting because he started booking us out quite early, like Berlin, where we played with Chuck Berry. Didn't even know. We thought we were going to a little club, and it turned out to be the Deutschlandhalle, where there were 7,000 or 10,000 people. Again, he booked us out all over Europe. So it wasn't as though we were only doing the Star Club. We were becoming really, really famous in Denmark, Holland, Switzerland, Austria, all them countries. And then always back, Hamburg stayed our base.
How much time did you spend in the UK at that point? Did you try and come back and play here, try and get some success here, or were you just too busy out there?
No, we were just too busy out there, actually. We just said we went back once or twice anyway because we got homesick. We didn't just stay there. Manfred would get us plane tickets to go home when we felt a little bit homesick. Because, of course, we, you know, we always felt home. Liverpool was our home. We never sort of left there completely. We always felt as then it was our home.
I think maybe that is maybe one thing where when people ask you, do you ever regret anything? I think we might have regretted never going back to play in Liverpool, even if it was only just, you know, for a few days or something, to have asked ourselves, what would it be like if they heard us the way we are now, the way we look now? That's something that they do really well in the play, the musical that's on the Royal Court in Liverpool, called Girls Don't Play Guitars, that at the end of it, they say, do you ever regret anything? And we say, yeah, well, maybe we should have come back one time to play. And then they say in the play, well, this is a play. We can change things. And the girls do a concert, supposed to be us going back to Liverpool. And honestly, the audience weren't just clapping. They were crying because of the way it was. Yeah. And that's maybe one thing we might have missed out on by not doing.
What about recording? Was it easy to take the live sound that you developed out there into the studio?
Well, that was easy. The first LP that we did, Manfred sent us to Munich. He picked the producer, he picked the studio, we picked the songs. It's like a live recording. I mean, it's different now recording nowadays than it is then because it was really live. You couldn't just play and then record the singing or the opposite way around. You had to do it live. And that was what I think is why that's the special feeling on our PSLP.
We have just recorded a new album with two of the girls from the musical because we felt as if we needed to do our songs again.
Hmm. There's a brilliant clip on YouTube of you playing. Is it Beat Club? What was that like appearing on TV? Did you do a lot of TV?
Yeah, we did quite a lot of television.
Yeah.
The thing about B Club was, you know, that B Club was like the German version of Top of the Pops or Ready, Steady, Go. We were on the very first one, the very first B Club. That was what was so special about us. And it was live, you know, and there was no big rehearsal beforehand. You more or less could pick what songs you wanted to do, but there was no, not even a sound check.
No, you just went on.
The atmosphere was great, wasn't it, Sylvia?
Yeah, oh, all them dancing, as you can see, dancing in front of us. And that, it was just great.
Were you equally as inspired to change your sound as the 60s went on, or were you happier in that kind of rawer sound?
I think we were happy with that. And especially really after, even though we got called the female Beatles and we absolutely adored the Beatles, but we were more like the Rolling Stones. You know, we didn't really change our music. The thing is that because we were so young when we started, we were only 22 when we finished. We were quite happy with the sound that we had and keeping it that way.
You mentioned finishing there. Now, I won't talk too much about that because a lot of that is in the book, but was it a series of events that led to you going your separate ways?
Come on, Sylvia. your fault.
It's all my fault. It was all my fault. I met a lovely, handsome fellow, played keyboards at the Star Club, and then I got pregnant. And so I had problems having the baby. They said if I wanted to keep the baby, I'd have to stop playing the drums. So I had to leave the band.
So that was the first one. And then, of course, Valerie couldn't come with us to Japan. We were going there for a six-week tour. And because her boyfriend had had this terrible accident and was paralyzed and she was looking after him, and he said, "You're definitely not leaving me for 6 weeks." So we found a German girl, and, well, two German girls. One played drums and one played guitars. Because in the 4 years that we had been playing up to then, of course, more and more female musicians were beginning to be noticeable. But when we got to Japan, Pam and I, we realised Japanese people thought we were great, but they hadn't seen us before. And they would have loved us to come back a year later, but we didn't enjoy us anymore. So we thought, us four belong together, we started together, we grew together, and this is the best time to finish us. Mm. And that's how we finished.
Through the kind of 70s, 80s, 90s kind of time, did you miss it? Or were you glad that it finished when it did? What was that like?
Oh, no, missed it terrible. Mm. You know, and of course, then I went into married life, of course, with John, who still played. He played, we went to London, we went to Blackpool, then we went and lived in Spain for 35 years. But it was always missed it until then Mary got in touch a few times to do reunions, which that was just absolutely fantastic. Doing that again, going back up on that stage was fabulous.
What about you, Mary?
But Sylvia had Ed and John had the club in Benidorm, and I had a small music publishing company with my husband, Frank, here in Germany. But it was always, especially because being in Germany, people would recognise you and say, "Oh, what happened to the Live of Birds? Why did you stop?" And I did miss it, definitely. And the great thing was about our first reunion, that was here in Hamburg, my children, they were 15 and 17 at the time, and they could stand there and watch us, and they just couldn't believe it, that look at our mums. Or Sylvia, your son came over for one of them.
Yeah, Stephen came, yeah.
That was great.
Okay. As we move toward the end now, ladies, my last kind of few questions is, you mentioned the musical there, which is a big hit. Tell us a little bit about how that came about, and did you start to notice more interest in your story as time went by?
That was the amazing part of it, you know, that it was always there, but it grew and it grew and it grew to us before the musical turned out. And what happened was that my husband was still alive at the time. He got a call in the publisher's office, and it was a man from Liverpool called Paul Fitzgerald. And he said to Frank, "I'm looking for Mary from the Live of Birds. Do you know how I can reach her?" And that's how it all started. Shortly after that, Frank died, and John died a few weeks before Frank. So when Paul got back in touch, he said, "You were going to let me send me a small version of your story." And I explained to him what had happened and asked him to give me a bit more time. So he kept on with us. And then after a while, I got in touch with Sylvia and told her that we mess up with them in Liverpool and told them a little bit of our story. And they said right away, oh, my gosh, this has got to be more than an article in a magazine. This has got to be a play. And that's how it started.
And more or less of a play. It nearly enough turns into a musical because it's live. The girls play live on stage. It's just absolutely fantastic. And then, of course, social media. After that, everybody heard about us. And you wouldn't believe this last few years how many people have been getting in touch with us about doing a movie. All things are happening at the moment. It's just, we can't believe it. But as you say, it's social media that's done this, and also mobile phones where we can all keep in touch with each other. I think Mary and I speak now near enough twice, three times every day.
Brilliant. Thank you, Mary and Sylvia, so much for talking to me. We will remind listeners, the book is The Life of Birds, Our Life in Britain's First Female Rock and Roll Band. Thank you both so much for talking to me.
Thank you. Right. Lovely to meet you.